listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And look, here's the thing. When it comes to stress eating, binge eating, any kind of emotional eating, any kind of problematic eating, it's not what you are eating that is the real problem. It's what's eating at you. Binge eating is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem, although it sure feels like the problem. So today, we've had a lot of new listeners on the show, and I thought I would do kind of a reintroduction and share a little bit about how I came to do this work, what makes my philosophy different from everybody else out there, and how I can help you break free from binge eating for good. And yes, it is possible. Liberation is possible. I don't believe in recovery because recovery is like we recover from a bad breakup. We recover from the flu. I believe in liberation, and that means sort of winning the war, conquering the enemy, and moving on with your life and never, ever, ever having to think about it again. Yes, that is possible. I know this from personal and professional experience. So let me start by telling you a little bit about me. Let me take you back in time. I'm a brand new therapist, and I'm about to start my very first group for women with binge eating disorder. And I open the door, and one of the women, let's set the scene. She's like in her 50s. She's got bright red hair. She's a little scary. And she looks me up and down and says, "You're the therapist? Seriously?" So I tried to figure out the problem. Was she expecting someone older with more experience? Was it totally obvious this was my very first group? And then she said, "So what does a skinny bitch like you know about binge eating?" What she didn't know was I once considered myself the poster child for eating disorders. What I said was, "This skinny bitch once scarfed down an entire box of gingerbread cookies in about 15 minutes flat. And I hate gingerbread, but I couldn't stop eating those cookies." I told the group that when I was 5 years old, I came to believe that if I were thinner, I would somehow be better. And that was the beginning of my descent into eating disorder hell. You know, the beginning of my obsession with my weight and with food. Josh is asking me, did I binge because I was restricting? Yeah, diet binge cycle. Restriction eventually leads to binging, but that's not why I was. That's a part of it. Binging is much more psychological, as I'm about to tell you. So when I look back at my teenage journals, every page is filled with numbers. Calories I ate, calories I burned. The weight I was, the weight I was going to be one day. And I was always on some crazy restrictive diet. There you are, Josh. But eventually my willpower would fail and I would eat the kitchen and sometimes I'd purge. So that's why I was the poster child for eating disorders. I had all of them. And I would just go in a circle, restricting, binging, binging, and purging. Restricting, binging, binging, and purging. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible cycle. And I was preoccupied with my weight, with food. It was all I seemed to think about day and night. It totally took over my life. So in college, I finally went to therapy for anxiety. I talked about guys, goals, dreams, fears. I was open with my therapist about every part of my life except one. I never told her what was going on with food. I was too ashamed of what I was doing. I was too mortified. And so nobody knew the truth. Nobody. And yet, by the time I left therapy, all my destructive eating behaviors were gone. And not once, not a single time had I ever talked about food. My therapist had no idea that I was even struggling. And yet, without ever talking about food, all my eating disorders were gone. So how is this possible? Well, I'm going to tell you in just a little bit. But first, I became a therapist, right? Because I wanted to help other people stop the obsession and the preoccupation and the madness about food, weight, and body image. And a lot of people are struggling. If you're listening to this, you are probably one of those people. Many, many people. The diet industry is a $60 billion a year industry. And business is booming. According to the CDC, let me just give you a few statistics. It won't take long, but it's kind of jaw-dropping. According to the CDC, nearly half of all Americans are on a diet. That is about 162 million dieters. The UK has about 13 million dieters. Australia has about 3 million. And that's just a few countries. And one study found that by the time the average woman is 45 years old, she will have tried 61 diets. That's crazy. That is crazy. So people all over the world are losing weight and gaining it back. So why is that? Well, for one thing, they may have a diagnosable and treatable condition, binge eating disorder. They don't even know it. In fact, binge eating disorder is the most prevalent eating disorder of all the eating disorders. Anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. Binge eating disorder is more prevalent than anorexia, people with anorexia and bulimia combined. And yet most people don't even realize they have it. They think, you know, they think they're a food addict. They think they have no control, right? But as a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, I know there is a reason our eating is out of control. And that reason isn't about control. It isn't about willpower, and it isn't even about food. So let me tell you about Jenna, not her real name. Some of you who've been listening to the show for a while will have heard this story, but you can't hear it enough because it makes an important point. So one night, Jenna was relaxing and watching TV when all of a sudden, Ben and Jerry's started calling her name. That's how she put it. She said, calling my name. She said nothing was wrong. She wasn't upset or worried about anything. She said she was addicted to Chunky Monkey. And I asked what she was watching before Ben and Jerry started calling her name. And it was a rerun of Charmed, her favorite show. Since she was doing something she enjoyed, there was no reason, or so she thought, that she'd want to down a pint of ice cream. And I wondered what was going on in the episode. Well, it was when a demon breaks the bond between the sisters, they start fighting, and everything gets really, really nasty. And I said, oh, sisters fighting, leading the witness, right? And Jenna got it. She said, oh my gosh, I totally see what happened. She had a terrible relationship with her sister. So watching the show activated intense feelings about their relationship. But before she was consciously aware that she was being triggered, right? This is a totally unconscious process. Before she was consciously aware that she was being triggered by watching the show, she went to ice cream for comfort and distraction. So ice cream was not the problem. It was the solution to the problem. I helped Jenna find new ways of identifying her emotions and soothing herself. And guess what? Ice cream stopped calling her name. Jenna is living proof that change is possible. You really can go from feeling powerless over food to eating normally. And Jenna's story also shows how our deepest emotions can be hidden from us, yet they're the very reason we're eating. So like Jenna, a lot of us think we are triggered by food, triggered by ice cream, triggered by chocolate, triggered by carbs, whatever. And I'm here to tell you, no, we are actually not triggered by food. We are triggered by a situation that we can't see or possibly don't want to look at. And I help people identify the hidden why they're turning to food, out of awareness, but not out of operation. The hidden why in their unconscious, they are turning to food. And that is a crucial first step to change, because identifying it is only the first step. And listen, this is not a new idea. This is not a new idea at all. But in my first, the idea that we're triggered by something in our unconscious, right? That's not new. But in my first decade of working with patients, I began to discover something that was new. And I started noticing that people's go-to binge foods had everything to do with their hidden emotional conflicts. So what if I told you that when someone is binging, what they choose to eat in that moment is directly related to what is eating at them, to why they are eating? How about that? So take a moment and think about your last craving. Was it for something smooth and creamy like ice cream or yogurt or, you know, pudding, something like that? Or filling like bread, burgers, cake, pasta, pizza? Or maybe it was all about the crunch and you wanted chips, pretzels, or crackers. What does it all mean? So I've discovered that we are drawn to three basic categories: creamy, filling, and crunchy. When we crave ice cream or something creamy, it isn't really ice cream we want. It's comfort. Like Jenna, right? She craved Chunky Monkey because she was all activated about her sister. She needed comfort. And the key to change is finding new ways of comforting ourselves that don't involve eating. The second category is filling, and that is food that takes up space within us. And that is related to symbolically filling a void. Instead, we need to look at the holes in our lives, the empty spaces, and find new ways to fill them. And last is crunchy textures. So anything that makes us bite down hard, the crunch, that's associated with forms of anger. Frustration, annoyance, irritation, rage, there are a lot of forms of anger. And instead, we need to learn to express anger in healthier ways with words. And what about chocolate? I just want to say, Josh is saying on Instagram, I think there's a connection to early childhood relationships and our current relationship with food. Of course. There is always a connection to early childhood or prior relationships and things that happen to us and our relationship with food. That is exactly what I do. That is exactly what I help people, how I help people connect the dots. I'm getting there, Josh. So what about chocolate? When we crave ice cream, chocolate, I just started telling you about ice cream again. All right. So chocolate, some of us only like milk chocolate or, you know, chocolate with creamy centers. And other people won't eat chocolate without nuts. And dark chocolate has a bit of a crunch, doesn't it? So chocolate is either creamy, associated with a need for comfort, or crunchy, which is associated with forms of anger. And also, maybe we need more sweetness in our lives. Not the kind that comes from sugar, but the sweetness of connection, fulfillment, and love. This is what I call my food mood formula. And keep in mind, this is important, eating some chips with your sandwich at lunch is not the same as having a whole family-sized bag of Doritos and hating yourself with every bite. The food mood formula only applies to situations where you feel a pull toward food in order to change the way you emotionally feel. Now, I talk about this in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. And you can also go to my website, drninainc.com, drninainc.com, and you can download a free guide to the food mood formula. So next time you get a craving, consider whether it's for something creamy, filling, or crunchy. When you identify and respond to those underlying needs, emotions, wishes, and conflicts, you stop eating to cope. So what I just shared, the food mood formula, what I just shared is a tool that helps you discover your hidden why. So you can focus on what's eating at you instead of on what you are eating. And what we are eating isn't even the real problem. It's not. It is not the real problem. Like I said before, it's a solution to the real problem. Let's talk about the real problem. We live in a society that says it is not okay to have feelings. We're considered weak if we have emotions and strong if we push them away. For example, you know, scared, oh, be strong, fight, don't give in to fear. Angry, oh, you're an angry person, you need anger management classes. Mm-mm-mm. Sad, oh, you must be depressed, you need to take an antidepressant. Now, of course, by the way, some people are depressed and they need antidepressants, but I'm talking about, you know, basic sadness. Anxious, there is a pill for that too. Right? The message is there is something wrong with feelings. And of course, as I just said, some of us do benefit from medication, but I'm talking about injunctions against our basic human emotions that connect us to ourselves and to each other. So with all these prohibitions against emotions, it's no wonder so many of us don't know how to be with ourselves, express ourselves, comfort ourselves, or respond to ourselves. No wonder so many of us eat as a way of coping. Yet, here's the good news. When we find other ways of coping, everything changes. Remember how I told you earlier that when I left therapy, all my eating disorders were gone, yet I never once, never ever talked about food? So, how was that possible? Well, my therapist helped me see that I was really hard on myself. I was a perfectionist. Nothing I did was ever, ever good enough. And on some level, I thought if I were skinnier, I'd be good enough. In therapy, I started being nicer to myself. Instead of being critical, I was curious. That's why I often tell people, be curious, not critical. Instead of tearing myself down, I encouraged myself. I stopped being the poster child for eating disorders because I turned my inner critic into a friend. And I'm sure, again, this is not a new concept, but then how do you turn your inner critic into a friend? Well, first, think about a friend of yours, someone that you care about deeply. Now, would you say, if that person was upset, would you say to that person, oh, you're upset. Okay, look, I know just what to do. The ice cream is in the freezer. The chips are in the pantry. We can order pizza. I got you. Of course not. You would be helpful, interested, supportive, kind. You wouldn't give them food. The goal is to treat ourselves that way. But first, we need to identify that inner critic, which is tricky because a lot of times we don't even realize we're being hard on ourselves. We don't even realize we're being self-critical. We think we're motivating ourselves, or we think we're keeping ourselves in line. So recently, one of my patients looked in the mirror and she said to her reflection, "You're disgusting. You're disgusting." Harsh, right? I asked her to repeat that in I language, as in, I'm disgusting instead of you're disgusting. And you know what? She couldn't do it. She said it sounded too harsh, and she was absolutely right. Because when we use the pronoun you to talk to ourselves, that often means that our inner critic is in charge of our thoughts. We can be really mean to ourselves from a second person pronoun position. So if you ever say anything like this to yourself, you're not good enough, you're gonna fail, they don't like you, you're a loser, you suck, you're disgusting, that is your inner critic talking. It makes us feel bad. And then we may just eat to avoid our own mean voice. So instead, take your own side. Ask yourself, what's going on with me right now? What do I need right now? Tell yourself, I don't have to be perfect to be good enough. I'm perfectly imperfect. I've got this. I like me. Changing the way that we talk to ourselves can be extremely powerful. And that means not just the words we say, but how we say them. So let me tell you about Sam, also not his real name. Sam said he tried talking to himself. He tried talking to himself, and it didn't work. He used all the right words, he said, but it did not help at all. So I asked Sam to repeat exactly what he had said in the same way he had said it. And I have to demonstrate this because you'll see what I mean. I have to show you, not tell you. So this is Sam. He said, "This is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay." Hello, of course he didn't feel better. He sounded like he was at a funeral. Would you say that to someone you care about? Oh, you're going to be okay. This is hard, but you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this. No. No, no, no. That doesn't help. The same words sound completely different in a different tone. This is hard. This is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay. Same words, totally different tone, totally different meaning. So a soothing tone can sound like a verbal hug, and then you feel better. And when you feel better, you don't need food to cope. And guess what? When Sam started being nice to himself in the words that he used and the way that he used them, he stopped turning to food for comfort. So he was able to be there for himself. So as you can see, when we figure out why we're eating instead of focusing on what we're eating, when we accept ourselves, really accept ourselves, our emotions, our weirdness, our wonderfulness, and when we learn to be nice to ourselves, then we break free from binging for good. Because by making peace with ourselves, we make peace with food too. And that means not thinking about food every minute of the day, being able to stay out of the kitchen at night, not judging ourselves. Nobody is perfect. And doesn't that make life more interesting? I think so. Imagine a bunch of perfect people. Boring. And it also means having a more relaxed and compassionate, easy way of being in the world. A client in my online program, she wrote to say, "Thank you for freeing me from 40 years of dieting and living on low-fat foods and sugar-free this and that." She told me she was in Paris and enjoying some tasty French food with no inner critic bullying her. She said, "Here's to being free and living life to the max." Now that's freedom. And that's what I want for you. If you're listening to this, that's what I want for you. And it is possible. How? First, we identify what. First, you got to stop dieting. Stop dieting because dieting sets you up on the diet binge cycle. Diet focuses on what you're eating and not why. Dieting doesn't help you get to the underlying reasons why, emotions, conflicts, whatever going on, that doesn't get to what's eating at you. Dieting only focuses on what you're eating, and it is all about some kind of restriction. Every diet involves some kind of restriction. There's always something you can't eat or not enough. And we want what we can't have. The anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation makes us want something more. So dieting keeps you also in a I can't have that, so I want it, or I ate that and now you feel bad about what you ate and now you feel bad about yourself, and then you say, screw it, now the day is ruined, so I might as well have everything. It just sets you up for failure. So first you got to stop dieting. Then use the food mood formula to figure out what's eating at you. Relabel success instead of I was so good because I didn't binge. Relabel it as I feel really good about myself because I realized that I binged because of these reasons, or I wanted to binge because of these reasons. And by the way, let me briefly go over the cycle of change. This is the cycle of change. You think you're a food addict. You think you have no control. You think you have no willpower. You feel terrible about yourself. You think you're full of shame. That's where you start. Then you get enlightened. Oh, it's not what I'm eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at me. There's a reason I'm turning to food. What is that reason? But you have no idea until later. Because we get so good at turning to food, we don't even sometimes think about it. It's so automatic. And then later on, you can look back and say, oh, that's what was going on with me. And that can last for a while. And you have to learn new coping mechanisms. Oh, I was sad. Got to learn a new way of being with yourself when you're sad. Oh, I was mad. You got to learn a new way of being with yourself when you're mad, etc. I was lonely. Then the next step in the process of change is, oh, I'm heading for the kitchen or I'm heading for food. I know exactly why I'm doing it. I know exactly what's going on with me, but I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. The next stage after that is, I know exactly why I want to do it. You know what? This time I'm not going to. I'm going to do something different. I'm going to comfort myself. I'm going to treat myself differently. The next stage after that is, you don't even think about food because you are able to cope. You no longer are using food as a way of coping. You have developed coping strategies that help you so effectively that food no longer is the thing that you need. And that's when you really are liberated. That's why I like to say liberated instead of recovered. Recovered is, you know, you're in recovery. You're in it. Interminably. You always have to think about it. No, 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 no. You actually can be liberated. You don't have to think about it because you've totally changed your relationship with yourself and therefore with food. How do you change your relationship with food? A little while ago, I gave you some tools, you know, treat yourself as a friend and all of that. What you need to do is identify what you are feeling. Then you need to express it. This is the part that everyone overlooks. Even yesterday, my own husband, who knows better, he was trying to comfort me. I had such an ordeal with American Express travel. I can't even tell you, but I'm going to tell you very briefly. I was on the phone for 2.5 hours. I spoke to nine different people, and none of them resolved my problem, and they all gave me conflicting information. I was going to either cry or scream or both. And, I told my husband, you know, oh, I'm so frustrated. And he said, well, yeah, but it's going to be okay. Like he was trying to be helpful. But really what I needed to hear was, that is so frustrating. Oh my gosh. And of course you feel frustrated. 2.5 hours, 9 different people. That's frustrating. That's beyond frustrating. That's infuriating. And not, it's kind of a first world problem and you're going to be okay. So what did he do? He went right to the reassurance, which is what we often do to other people and what we do to ourselves. But we shouldn't do that. Now, let me tell you about a time that I did this to my daughter, and then I'm going to relate it to emotional pain and food. So bear with me. My daughter, I think she's about 6 years old. She's 14 now, so she's going to be mortified to hear that I am talking about this, which I kind of do often because it's such a perfect way of articulating this. She came to me. She'd fallen down. She'd skinned her knee. She's bleeding. And she says, Mom, it hurts. It hurts. It hurts. It's so painful. And she's crying. And I said everything I shouldn't say. Everything. I said, oh, it doesn't look so bad. Mistake number one, I dismissed it. You're going to be okay. Mistake number two, I dismissed it. I said, let's just get you a Band-Aid. You're going to be fine. It could have been worse. Mistake number three, I compared it to how it could have been. So, of course, she keeps crying because it hurts. And then I realize, oh, my gosh, I'm doing the thing I tell everybody not to do. I'm doing it. So I quickly pivoted, and I looked at her, and I said, you know, you're right. Now that I look at that knee, that looks painful. That looks like it really hurts. That must really hurt. And guess what? That's when she stopped crying. She's like, yeah, yeah, it does. It does. And she sort of stopped crying. And then she said, okay, yeah, it does. Now can we get a Band-Aid? So what happened? As soon as I acknowledged and validated her physical pain, she could feel better. As long as I was dismissing it and telling her it wasn't so bad and it could have been worse, and she felt frustrated and upset. She wasn't being validated. The same goes for our emotional pain. If someone is in emotional pain and you tell them, oh, it could have been worse. Oh, it's not so bad. Look on the bright side. You're actually invalidating them. And even though you're trying to be helpful, you're actually invalidating and dismissing what they are feeling. And if you do that to yourself, you are invalidating and dismissing yourself. So what's the key? How do you comfort yourself? I created an acronym. I love my acronyms. VARY, V-A-R-Y, stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. You've got to, it really should be acknowledge and then validate, but that didn't work for the acronym. Plus, they kind of go together. So bear with me for that too. Okay, so acknowledge. If you're in pain, you're upset. Like, let's take the example of Jenna. Yeah, of course you're upset. You're watching a show about sisters fighting, and that's bringing up all kinds of intense feelings about your sister, and that is painful and upsetting. Of course you feel this way. How could you not? It's hard to have this terrible relationship with your only sister. That's really painful. Okay, that's validate and acknowledge. And then reassure is, but you know, you're also working through it. You're healing. You're coming to terms with it. You're dealing with it. And you're not always going to feel this way. You are going to heal. Let me also make an analogy with physical and emotional pain in terms of healing. When we have an open wound, it always hurts. You touch it, it hurts. But then when we heal, there's a scab, you touch it, it hurts a little bit, but not as much as when it's an open wound. And then when it's a scar, that's the place where it used to hurt. Same with emotional healing. When you go through a healing process, which is sort of a grieving process for what happened and what didn't happen. And by the way, it's not in the past, it's in the present. The past is alive in our present constantly. The whole point is to put it in the past. But when you don't heal emotional wounds and you try to ignore it, drop it, say it's in the past, dismiss it, you know, anything that you do that other than process it, you stay an open wound, and you and not much causes it to hurt. But when you heal that wound, it takes less and less, right? It's not going to, it hurts less and less. And eventually it doesn't hurt at all. It's just, you know, something that used to hurt. And that's why healing our emotional wounds is so, so important. So use the food mood formula to identify what you really need. Do you need comfort? You need to, are you angry? Are you lonely or empty? Is there some kind of void in your life? Then express yourself. Express how you feel. I have a something in my book. Again, go to, if you have it, go to page 45, 46, 47. And you can, there are a lot of prompts for all these different emotions that help you actually articulate and express your feelings, because what you feel and express, you will heal. We can't drop our feelings, positive think them away, stuff them down, ignore them, or anything. The only way to get rid of feelings, as counterintuitive as it sounds, is to actually feel them. So you use the food mood formula to identify what it is that's going on. Then you express the emotions. You express how you are feeling in words. And then you use very, in a nice tone, of course, to respond to yourself. It sounds simple. If you're used to responding to yourself by turning to food or getting mad at yourself or focusing on your weight or doing something to avoid or protect yourself from feeling something uncomfortable, it is hard to do. But it gets easier. Practice makes progress. Josh is saying, do you have similar relationship to food? And no, I don't have a similar relationship to food in the credit card company. What I was angry. I was angry and I was frustrated, and I did the right thing. I was expressing how angry and frustrated I was. However, there might have been a day where I would have told myself, I can't do anything about the credit card people, and there's no point in getting angry. And then I would have gone and eaten something, and then I would have been angry with myself for eating, which is a total displacement, because really I would have been angry at the credit card company that I repressed or suppressed and then ate over it as a way of coping, and then displaced my anger that really belonged to the credit card company back at me. That would have been what would have happened previously, but not last night. Last night, I expressed myself. I expressed my anger, and that's how I got rid of it. So, okay. So, you know, we only have about 12 minutes left on the show. If anyone would like to call in, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. I have time for one quick call. 323-203-0815. If not, I will get to some questions. These are questions that people have sent in. I have a whole list of questions. And if you have any questions for me, feel free to reach out to me. Carly Gash is on. Hi, Carly Gash.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Carly Gash.
Hello.
What's your
question? Do you hear me well?
I hear you.
Awesome. So I wanted to share with you that yesterday was a unique day because of Memorial Day. I had like two therapy sessions with my two good therapists. And in the end, I was supposed to have also group with my girls, like group therapy. And I love all these two people and the group of girls too. Those are the places where I get my support and I'm loved. And I just recently started feeling, actually feeling that I'm loved. Not that I was always loved by those people, but I started feeling that I'm really loved, letting this feeling in. So what happened yesterday, I did two therapy sessions. And when it came in the evening to that group, some of my business partners, she called. She's not like a partner, like a colleague more from my company. And we talked, but she's also like a boss lady in our transportation industry. It's just hard to, you know, we share a lot being like feisty women in this industry. We are so happy to talk to each other. Carly, and we just talk.
Carly, I got to interrupt you. I only have 10 more minutes. So can you, maybe tighten up the story that,
yeah,
like,
yes.
Tell me,
so, Dr. Nina, I noticed that yesterday, I basically told myself subconsciously in the you voice. So the voice said, who do you think you are? Are you going to have three warm interactions in a day? That's too much for you. You will never have life where the whole day you have the pleasure and the joy of having three nice, warm interactions with three different people. So I talked to her. I skipped my group.
Good for you for recognizing this. I mean, for you to be able to recognize that and realize that you were, in a way, restricting yourself emotionally, mm-hmm. and that you see the you voice, which from previous calls we know is the voice of other people. Also, I should add that often when we use the you voice, it is the voice of someone else that has talked to us that way. Not always. So you recognize the voice, you recognize that it was telling you, you only get so much good, Carly Gash, and no more for you. So that is in itself really significant. And then did you challenge that voice?
You know, I kind of was really, really sad because I was like, I know you teach us not to turn it against ourselves, but I was really frustrated because, like, oh my God, it was such a unique opportunity to experience this warmth like three times in a row. And I planned that, but then I myself called her because she called me. I called back. I missed the call. And then I was like, I was in the moment feeling, but then I said, it's okay that maybe this time I could make it like three times in a row. The main thing that talking to her was kind of connection as well. It was a different type of connection, but it was a nice warm connection to a woman who is in my industry. And we are so similar, like, you know, in terms of energy and freshness and intelligence and the way we do business together, very smart, very fast. It's sort of the connection as well. And I said, it's not like it's a race, you know, where I have to bring that gold medal of letting in all the love. I said, it's very interesting that I did that. I wonder why I did that. I know why. And I said, well, then I have to be, as usual, up to the challenge to let this love in, and I just need to work more, and I will do so. I will never give up.
Okay, so Carly Gash, good thinking. And by the way, we know that when we fill up on relationships and we fill up on gratifying, satisfying connections with people, notice we use the same words as with food, that we don't use food as a substitute. But I actually have a different take on what you're describing, that you had two wonderful therapy sessions, and then instead of going to the group, you actually connected with someone else, someone outside that safe kind of therapy world, that you dared to connect with somebody and have a nice conversation. And you know what? Maybe three therapy sessions in a day is just too much for you. And
no,
that's okay too.
No.
But either way, either way, what I hear is you didn't reach out to someone who made you feel terrible. You didn't reach out to some rejected person. You reached out to someone and had a nice connection, and that's significant. Mm-hmm. That fills the void. So you can look at it as, oh, you avoided. Wait, Carly, gosh, you can look at it as you avoided the group, or you can look at it as the group is always there. You feel safe about not showing up once. You're not going to lose your connection with those people, and you felt safe to reach out to a new person.
That was exactly what I thought, Dr. Nina, when I was making a decision to talk to my new friend, because we talked for 2 hours, and man, I don't meet such women a lot in my life. Like, because we're in a similar position, being women in a male-dominated transportation industry, where I think there is less than 3% of females in this industry. And we're like the badass ones. You know, she has the same attitude. And I was like, we just talked for 2 hours. We decided to go to like Catalina Island together. Like, she's also like, oh, she was happy to talk to me. I was happy to talk to her. But I was sad because I wanted everything. I wanted 3 therapy sessions and talk to her. I wanted 4 interactions in the day. That's why I was like so sad, like why I couldn't do it like all at once. So
okay, but focus on what you had and not what you didn't have. The way we talk to ourselves and the way we interpret things affects how we feel. How we feel affects what goes on with food. So if we tell ourselves, oh, look, how I didn't get everything I wanted. I didn't get my 3 therapy sessions plus a nice conversation. You're going to feel bad, and then you're going to turn to food. But if you tell yourself, and the situation is the same, but how you interpret it is different. If you tell yourself, hey, I had 2 therapy sessions and a nice conversation with someone new, and I trusted myself to show up and connect for 2 hours. This is awesome. Then, and I'll see the babes next week. Then you feel okay. You feel fine. You don't need food to distract yourself. So our interpretation is also really important. The way we interpret our world affects the way we feel. The way we feel affects what we do with food.
Thank you so much. I already feel so much better thinking about this. And actually, I devoted this week on working like with perspective. I decided to go back to my past traumatic memories and revisit them with some more like sense of authority. And what you just said, it's exactly what I'm ready to do. Because before I was mourning and going through hard feelings, but now I'm kind of ready to change my attitude to them. So thank you so much for this wonderful suggestion. I already feel much better.
I'm really glad to hear that. And great job in catching the you voice, which we know the you voice is an identification with your aunts who were nasty to you. And so if you're talking yourself in a you voice, you're generally being nasty to yourself. So let's just keep going on that psychological exorcism and get those aunts, however you say, tomato, tomato, out of your head.
Thank you very much. You know, Dr. Nina, I will also at some point make it a point to change the you voice. Instead of being you, them, aunts, I will change you to being you supportive as well as I supportive. So double support.
I think that sounds like a very good idea.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Carly Glash. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I'm and great job. Great progress.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, Dr. Nina.
You too. Bye. See, Carly Glash is so nice to me, to everybody else, but to herself. She has been so harsh, so mean, so caustic, so terrible. And that has made her feel terrible, and she ends up binging. But as she is being nicer to herself, she's feeling better. She's feeling better. You don't need to binge. So part of the way to break free from binging is to really look at the thoughts and beliefs that you have about yourself and the world, how it affects you. When you change that, it affects how you feel. But also cultivate new ways of responding to yourself when you feel bad. Because even if we're nice to ourselves all the time, situations will arise like me and Amex, that make us feel bad, mad, upset. And we need to learn new coping strategies to be with those feelings differently. So that is it for the show today. Thank you so much for joining me today. And if you want more information and inspiration like you heard today, head on over to Facebook and join my Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community, where you will get support, understanding, and strategy. I can't talk today. That's because I've had 4 hours of sleep because I was so upset about the Amex thing. See, I'm perfectly imperfect, like I always tell you to be. You will get support, understanding, and strategies to change, and you will get me because I am there daily in that group to give feedback and insight and more. So again, that's Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. I will see you there. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.